fear. Oh, it comes off Hughes. A wee bit better. It is McHugh!
Hello, welcome to the MFC podcast tonight. Myself, Jay and Buster, we'll look back on yesterday's disappointing 1-0 defeat to Aberdeen, and we'll look ahead to a busy week in which Motherwell will face Hearts in the Betfred Cup quarter-final and also face a trip to Rugby Park. Guys, welcome along.
Cheers.
How do?
Jay, yesterday, deja vu, basically a 1-0 defeat, a very similar game to the previous week against Hearts. Very little in the game. Very small margins, but yet again on the end of a negative result. Two games I think we'll look back on and think we should have taken something from both games, but the reality is 0 points.
Yeah, I think you've hit the nail on the head there. Lots of similarities between yesterday and the game against Hearts, even just in terms of, you know, the stats. I know we kind of talk about how stats aren't a fair reflection of the game. I think people who haven't been at either game might look at them and think, oh, Motherwell, you know, dominated possession. But, you know, that's kind of a negative story of the game for me. You know, both of them were games in which the opponents took a lead and then have the quality and the experience to just sit back in that lead and watch us huff and puff and play the ball from side to side with absolutely no creativity, no ability to get in behind. And that's exactly what happened yesterday. I'm sure we'll obviously come on to talk about, you know, the refereeing decisions, the two penalty claims in particular. But putting that aside, I just think we never really sort of, I don't know, there was no intensity. We know that there's no creativity. We kind of talk about that quite frequently. We are a very one-dimensional side. But I think yesterday was a good example of just how, you know, we just lack a plan B. We talked about it last week. We just have no plan B. And I think the biggest disappointment for me was the fact that all the way up to Aberdeen, we obviously knew Andy Rose was missing, we knew Main was missing. And I think it was just a question of, well, obviously Bowman will come in for Main, and who will replace Rose? Will it be Grimshaw, Gordon, maybe Turnbull? I don't think there was ever any suggestion that we would, you know, try something different. I think we kind of expected to go with that 3-5-2 that we're kind of comfortable with now. We're settled. Certainly the midfield trio of Rose, Campbell and Biggie has been really good this season. So, you know, I think it would have made sense to replace Rose. And this isn't hindsight talking. It's, you know, the conversations all the way up there were who deserves to replace Rose. And instead, we just, you know, the lineup was all completely wrong for me. The system was just absolutely wild, to be honest. I'm not a massive critic of Stephen Robinson. Praise him absolutely for what he's done since he came in. But I thought he got it spectacularly wrong yesterday. I think, you know, last night when we were talking about it, there was a mention of how we went to Pittodrie last season and played a 3-4-3 and won. And that's how we played yesterday. I would like to think we put more preparation into our, you know, our build up to games rather than just, you know, what we did the last time. This is a different season, a different Motherwell team, a different Aberdeen team. For me, it kind of looked as though we panicked a bit. You know, Andy Rose is obviously integral to what we do. And if Andy Rose out, it was almost as though we just completely overcomplicated things. You know, I think we spent the first 15, 20 minutes trying to work out where players were playing. You know, Donnelly was so far back as a right wing back that at times he was right back. Biggie and Campbell were completely overrunning the middle of the park. Salmon, you know, found himself on the left of the front three, often at left mid at times. And Elliot Freer, I kind of felt sorry for because he's continually played at left wing back, just waiting for that chance to be a winger. And when it finally comes, he started on the right wing. And even then, it wasn't necessarily a right winger. I mean, the guys behind us were spent about 5 minutes talking about how they thought Elliot Freer was in a free role. It kind of just looked completely disjointed, completely unbalanced. It was a bit of a shambles, to be honest. And I would, you know, I would suggest if you start a game like that and lose an early goal, you're going to have to blame the lineup. You know, we did change it. McHugh kind of went forward into midfield for a spell. We brought on Cadden at halftime. We used our other two substitutes really early on in the second half. So although it's encouraging to know we have a manager who's prepared to change things when it's required, it was blatantly obvious that it just didn't work. We tried to do something with the lineup that, for me, you know, failed absolutely miserably. We found ourselves an early goal down. And what we've learned, particularly over the last two games, is that when we lose a goal and go a goal behind, the teams against us, if they decide just to sit back and let us have the ball, we will do absolutely nothing with it. So for me, you know, those opening 6 minutes of the game just completely, you know, the game was lost in those.
We've talked before about Stephen Robinson, Buster, and the fact that he's willing to make changes. I think it was actually his first game in charge. He made two or three changes at half-time in his opening game against Kilmarnock. He's been like that right from the start. He's able to admit when he's getting it wrong and try and react to that situation. But I don't think very much changed in the second half. I don't know whether you would agree, Jay, we offered actually less of a threat going forward than we did in the first half. And don't get me wrong, right, we weren't offering a great deal going forward in the first half either. That's frustration and frustrating for me in terms of managers are going to get it wrong, players will make mistakes, that's part and parcel of football. But this is quite a common trend as well with Stephen Robinson, where he doesn't get it right first time and then has to react afterwards. You need to get it right from the start more often.
Obviously, that is true. You do need to get it right from the start. But obviously, it didn't go along yesterday. But you know, when I seen the team sheet, I thought, you know, he's made a couple of changes. We've spoke, you know, how Cadden was maybe needing a wee break in the bench, a wee spell on the bench or something. You know, he's obviously seen that as well, tried to make a few changes. But a bit like Jay just said, basically, you know, I read three or four different opinions of where players were playing or how we'd set up, and I don't think MD really knew for sure. This is the first I spoke to you guys or paid attention really to any of the group chats, so I don't know what he's really have come down with, how players did actually, how we did start, how players lined up. But
we were all over the place at the start, and obviously conceding a goal early on doesn't help, but I don't think the players knew from the off what they were meant to be doing.
Well, that again, I obviously can't comment because I wasn't there, but from what I was reading, you know, just guys tweeting or, you know, the text commentaries or whatever you say on Twitter, whatever I was reading there, you know, I don't think the players knew what they were doing either. But again, as I say, I wasn't there, so I couldn't obviously, I couldn't even form that opinion. That was just my opinion of what I was, opinions, too many opinions in there, basically. He tried to change it up a bit, but it obviously didn't work out. I was reading 3-4-3s, things or this, and I don't know how it went or whatever, but you know, there's possibly, even in the 11 that he picked, you know, there's a 3-5-2 or whatever in there somewhere. You know, something, again, we're always saying he should change it up when he does for having a go at him, but it obviously was something that we weren't ready to do because, you know, we lost that early goal. And even then, you know, I've seen that Liam Oliver tweeted, I think it was yourself, Jay, saying, right after they'd scored, saying, is that us, have we started to sit back yet? And from what I read, that's exactly what Aberdeen basically done, sort of sat back and defended the lead. And it's same old problems, as you mentioned. We don't seem to be able to break teams down when they do that. And I think that's becoming a bit of a trend. You know, I think the teams are recognising that if they are, you know, better than us, basically, Aberdeen probably got a better squad than us, Hearts the same. If they can sort of, you know, beat us at our own game and then sit in, we don't have a chance of breaking them down. I think the teams are maybe realising that. And even going back to Kilmarnock last year when, you know, they were on their fantastic run, they came to Fir Park and I thought they were atrocious, but they were the ones that got the goal and sat in and basically shit-fest it past us. And I think that's what teams are now starting to do.
I think I was maybe a bit harsh in my assessment overall of Robinson in terms of, I do quite often think that he has to make sweeping changes or sweeping substitutions to change the game and to try and almost eradicate the mistakes he's made in the team selection. He's very good at addressing his own problems. And I also think he's a very, very good manager, it must be said. But I just think that yesterday there was a clear change for me. I didn't have any doubts in my head. When I heard that Andy Rose was doubtful, I thought Liam Grimshaw would come in. I thought like for like, because we have been quite rigid in our team selection and it's been breeding a fair degree of success. So to then go and make these sweeping changes is confusing. I don't think anyone in our support that I've seen has been calling for radical changes of the starting 11, because while we lost the previous game to Hearts, we weren't a million miles away.
Well, I think that, again, he's tried to change all of fair play to him, but guys like, for example, Liam Donnelly, as far as I'm led to believe, kind of plays, you know, defensive midfielder. Same with Carroll McHugh and Barry Maguire and all, and for the unders. You know, as far as I'm led to believe, these are guys who play, you know, centre-half stroke, centre-mid, you know, and I know Liam Donnelly plays obviously in the right-hand side or whatever, but, you know, if Liam Donnelly's coming in to replace somebody in that, you know, that in that lineup, what, you know, I thought he'd have been maybe McHugh in midfield, back three, including Donnelly, Freeland, Tate on either side. But when I started to read the nobody really knows what they're doing sort of type tweets, I was a bit dumbfounded. And as you say, we lost the goal after 3 or 4 minutes, which for me sort of confirmed that despite the fact that I wasn't there, I don't think the players knew what they were doing. I don't, just based on people tweeting, you know, what are we doing here? I don't think people know what we're doing.
I think when you're saying there about what you expected the formation to be, I think we were exactly the same. I mean, we were in the golf club before the game with a couple of Aberdeen fans, obviously, that we know for Scotland games. And we were looking at the side and, you know, obviously you do that thing. You say, all right, it's a back three of Aldred, Hartley, Donnelly, McHugh must be into the middle. So, you know, it was when we actually turned up and saw, well, I was going to say saw where players were playing, like found yourself trying to work out where some players were playing. It almost had a bit of the Mark McGee's about it. You know, there was the, you know, Mark McGee, just some games you went into and suddenly, you know, Jake Taylor was at left mid with Marvin Johnson at left back and things like that. You know, these kind of wild changes. And I just couldn't, you know, I still can't fathom why. I mean, it was essentially a back three of Aldred, McHugh and Hartley, with Donnelly at right wing back, Tate at left wing back. But at times, I do know that obviously, you know, at times if Tate's going forward, the defence might move around like a pendulum to obviously cover and things like that. But it just felt like Tate was playing his normal game, so he was kind of pushed up full, you know, quite far forward. But Donnelly was practically a right back at times, to the point where a couple of times it actually looked as though he'd went to a back four with Hartley at left back. It just didn't work at all. It was as though, you know, Donnelly in particular looked a little bit lost at right wing back. You know, Campbell and Biggie started almost in the holding midfield role, but there wasn't another midfielder in there to kind of link up the midfield with the forward line. So you just had almost, you know, seven outfield players almost in your own half at times, you know, a defensive seven outfield players. And then Salmon on the left wing and Freer on the right wing just, you know, isn't going to work. I mean, I think any Motherwell fan, if you told them that you were playing a front three with Salmon on the left and Freer on the right, would have raised eyebrows. You know, as I said earlier, it's great to have hindsight. It's great to have a go and criticise after the fact. But, you know, this was certainly a lineup that I don't think anybody would have seen going well. And as we've already said, we can see the early goal. It was quite clear that there were groups, certainly pockets of Motherwell fans around us, who were just spending the whole first half talking about where players are meant to be playing, which kind of says it all. And, you know, by the time that, perhaps, you know, as Sparrow's kind of said, we didn't necessarily go on and do much better after the changes were made. But by the time we actually had put out a kind of a side that you would expect to see from Motherwell with, you know, Cadden on the right, Freer on the left, at least guys in the positions they're meant to be in. Bowman obviously came on and offered, you know, more in 5 minutes than Salmon had the whole first half. You know, even then, by that point, Aberdeen are one goal ahead. They know all they need to do is stay organised, sit in, and just, you know, practically the entire second half was just Aberdeen hitting in the counter or Biggie picking up the ball in the middle and just drifting from side to side with nobody to pass to. And I think that's the concerning thing. You know, I don't think there's anything to worry about in terms of relegation, because I don't think teams like Dundee or St Mirren are going to be good enough to get that early goal and then keep concentrating and keep focused for the rest of the game to see it out. But your teams like Hearts, your teams like Aberdeen, we'll obviously find out on Saturday if Kilmarnock are amongst them. You know, those are the sides who have the quality to go and get that early goal and then just sit in And it's starting to get that kind of feeling about it, where if we can see an early goal on Wednesday or Saturday, we might as well just go home at that point, because it's looking really, really frustrating. Because we just can't come back from that. As soon as a team sits in, that's us done.
Last week we reflected on the incidents that led up to the Hearts goal, with Stephen Naismith putting it in after a collision between Nick Pizzu and Trevor Carson. Thankfully, through the week we would learn that Trevor Carson's injury wasn't as bad as many of us anticipated. Yesterday, two flashpoints in which both occasions I reckon we should have had a penalty. I must confess, at the game, yourself and I, Jay, we looked at each other when Considine brought down Elliot Freer and thought, no, that's a perfectly good tackle. And we thought the referee had got it right in terms of not awarding a penalty. Second half, with minutes to go, Andrew Considine again involved as he raises his arm at a corner. Arm so far away from a natural position, it's untrue. Referee perfectly placed to see it. Again, misses incident, no penalty. The ball breaks to Elliot Freer, who then takes a shocking dive, an embarrassing dive, actually. That also didn't work. A yellow card for Elliot Freer. The chance is gone. And with that, we were confirmed and consigned to defeat. Aberdeen have been advocates for some time for video technology. This week, Alan Burrows has come out and said, we need to be using this. We need to be making use of all the TV cameras, all the great extensive angles that we've got when covering these Premiership matches. I saw or I heard Tab Cowan on the radio yesterday suggesting, well, why don't we just actually, if Aberdeen are for it, Mother were for it, why don't we just sneakily use it? It would have come in very handy yesterday. There's many reasons for and against the introduction of VAR in Scottish football. Expense is obviously the biggest barrier, a massive barrier at that. But for me, the referees are poor. The referees need more help. And also, referees absolutely need to get better. These are big decisions. The margins are so slim. We've lost an early goal. There's been so little in the game for the next 84 minutes. To then get home and see the two incidents where he should have had clear penalties. It's frustrating because as fans, we're paying through the nose to go and support our teams. And you just want it to be fair. I'm not suggesting in any way that Nick Walsh is a cheat. It's just shambolic in terms of standard of refereeing.
Oh, I've seen the two incidents. The tackle on Freer, even in the highlights, I wasn't 100% sure yet. But the handball was ridiculous. What was kind of ridiculous about it was there seemed to be very little, you know, claim, or no one seemed bothered that it even happened. I don't think any of the Mullow players even bothered to, you know, raise their hand or put a shout out for it. But and you see then Elliot Freer took a dive. But just on the standard of refereeing as well, I watched the Celtic game today, and they should have had a clear cut penalty. And Kirk Broadfoot was wrestling one of their centre halves, and it was one of the worst decisions I've ever seen, to be honest. It was Thompson, surprisingly. But you know, the standard refereeing is something that needs looked at. But as I say, one of the penalties, the first one, I'm still unsure, just because the YouTube footage isn't the clearest. I can see why, you know, it could have been Freer that kicked the ball, and it was a Considine, you say. I couldn't tell for the highlights, sorry, but you know, he could have done him there. But the handball thing was atrocious, and I was more confused by the fact that we didn't seem to claim for it, to be honest with you.
In fairness, though, I think the thing about the handball, I mean, obviously, first and foremost, it is. I mean, it's so blatant, and from the footage, you can see where the referee is. You know, the hand's up in an unnatural position. The ball strikes the arm. The referee's looking right at it. I mean, there is absolutely, it's a stonewall a penalty, as you'll see. The reason I don't think we claim for it is because the ball then bounces down in amongst bodies, and I'm glad we didn't claim for it, because if any Motherwell player stands there and puts their hand up when the ball's still in the Aberdeen box, I'd be going absolutely taunto at them. It's only after the referee blows for Freer's dive do the players then rush to the referee, and I'm not convinced that they'd be rushing because Freer's went down. I think Aldred in particular runs to the referee because he's going, we've just been denied a handball. So I think we do remonstrate with the referee and claim for it, but we wait until, you know, the referee's bored, which is entirely what we should be doing. It was a dive. I actually said after the game that I thought Freer, bizarrely, actually had two or three of those around the middle of the park as well, throwing himself down. The atmosphere was so electric inside Pittodrie, you actually heard them yelping on one occasion. I don't know whether it's because he was maybe angered or frustrated at not getting the penalty first time around, and so started throwing himself down, because it's not something I've really associated in his game. But he was diving on Saturday, and it was never a penalty, that one, although we should have had one just before. But on the first one, for me, it's a penalty, as Sparrow says. At the time, it happened right in front of us, and I couldn't really work out why. We were like in the right-hand side of the Motherwell support, looking dead on it, and it looked like a good tackle at the time. I couldn't really, you know, work out why the Motherwell support to the left of us were just so adamant it was a stone wall. Obviously, all football fans claim and are biased and assume that it's a penalty or shout for it. But it was really, really, you know, adamant that it was a stone waller. And it's only having seen it back, it just shows you, you know, that couple of feet of a different angle, you get an entirely different perspective of it. But for me, it's a penalty. For me, Freer gets there first and Considine takes him out. I'm a little bit more forgiven with that one, though, because obviously at the game, I didn't think it was a penalty. So I'm then not going to blame the referee for not giving it. But I think it's also important to acknowledge that the referee had an absolute horrendous game from start to finish. The game was entirely, any flow the game had at any point was entirely disrupted by it. There was, you know, he would give a foul in, you know, one team's box, and then as soon as the free kick was lumped forward, he would give a foul against the defence. It was just like that the whole game. It was stop start. And I was reminded earlier this morning on Facebook about the incident where Aberdeen had a throw-in. The boy went to take the throw-in. I think it slipped slightly out of his hand, but it was a clear foul throw. Aberdeen then tried to play on. So it wasn't as though they were, you know, an honest mistake. It slipped. They tried to play on. So the referee blew for the foul throw, but then let Aberdeen take it again. It was just start to finish an absolutely shambolic performance from the referee. And on a different day, you know, we get a point because he points to the spot with that handball. Not that we necessarily deserved it. Maybe over the piece we might have deserved a draw, but that's just as much to do with Aberdeen sitting in as anything. There's nothing to kind of guarantee that Aberdeen then wouldn't step out if we'd scored that and go and get another. But it is frustrating. You know, it is frustrating that folk have paid hard-earned cash, not just to get into the game, but to get up there. And to watch yet another kind of really, really poor display by the officials. And as Buster says, you know, I saw the foul on Bayata earlier today, and it's, you know, it's very similar to that handball, because the referee's in quite a similar position, is literally about 5 yards away from it and is looking directly at it. There is no way he doesn't see it. And Broadfoot just grabs Bayata and chucks him to the ground. I just don't know what we're supposed to actually expect anymore. You know, you've got the SFA having to write to UEFA and FIFA to get clarification on the rules. We don't know whether, you know, suspensions that are appealed against are going to be lifted or not. I mean, it's just turning into an absolute shambles. I mean, if that's not a handball, if that's not a penalty with the referee looking right at it, then, you know, what is?
And just a final one on Aberdeen. I think we should all throw our weight behind their campaign for a new stadium. I think they've now got planning permission. What a terrible ground to go in as a visiting supporter, stuck in a corner with the North Sea blowing right on you. Actually, when we stepped out of the ground, we realised that it wasn't actually anywhere near as cold as we thought it was, but I was very close to hypothermia at a few points yesterday. Bitterly cold, such a horrible, horrible corner to have to go and sit and watch football. Yeah, so by all accounts, we're going to be moved behind the goals when they get a new stadium as well. So that'll be hopefully a bit more pleasant than yesterday was. All in all,
the tees. The tees sound a wee bit bummed up as well, eh?
Oh, well, I had to go back up today for the women's game as well. So I've had a weekend in Aberdeen, which as bad as weekender, Aberdeen weekender coming to Channel 4 in the very near future, guys. Wednesday, we move on and the Betfred Cup quarter final at Tynecastle. Jay, it's quite clear all the momentum is with Hearts. We're going into the game in the back of two defeats, one of them to Hearts. Hearts didn't get the 3 points yesterday against Livingston, but they're top of the league. They possibly thought when they dropped a couple of points yesterday, that was a great chance for Celtic to take advantage. They didn't, obviously, today. A very, very difficult task, as we've discussed when the draw was made. But another big occasion, a cup tie, games that seem to have thrived in recent times. Tynecastle, a fantastic stadium to go, completely the opposite from Pittodrie. I think it's one to look forward to. I'm not 100% sure why I've got that mindset, but I'm looking forward to it.
Well, we're Scotland's Premier Cup team these days, so I mean, I dare say that's part of it. A one-off game, you know, has to be finished on the night. You know, it's always got that kind of buzz about it. Under the floodlights, as you say, it's a decent place to go. Although, obviously, you know, if you're going through to Tynecastle, you perhaps prefer it to be a Saturday or something like that, rather than having to get there from your work. But it'll be good just being that kind of cup tie. I would like to obviously see us go back to what we do. You know, yes, it would be great to have a plan B. Yes, it would be great to have a creative player that can unlock defences. But I think we need to accept that the transfer window's closed. Even if it was open, still, you know, creative players don't, you know, aren't going 10 a penny. We have a system that works. We have a system, well, that works some of the time, that we play well. Some of the times that grinds out results. Some of the times, I think it's one of those games that we just have to go back to what we do and hope that it's good enough. Obviously, we saw last week that Hearts, when they want to play us at our own game, have the ability and the players to do so effectively. So we need to just be wary about that and go into the game looking to hopefully grind something out. You know, whether it is a decision that actually goes our way for a change, whether it's a mistake, you know, any game of football is winnable. But I think we need to kind of get away from what we did yesterday. We can't overthink it. We can't overcomplicate it. We are what we are, which is a very simple but at times effective side of what we do, and we need to get back to doing that. And if we do, as I say, it's a one-off cup tie. You know, who knows, a biggie free kick, you know, a corner, a ball into the box, Hartley or Aldred getting on the end of it. It's certainly a winnable game, and it should be a good night. But as I said earlier, unfortunately, I think far too many teams in the league are wising up to the way we play. And the fear has to be that if Hearts go ahead, it's really difficult to see what we are then able to do to get back in the game out with, you know, a mistake or a refereeing decision.
Buster, Jay's already started to discuss the team lineup. We obviously don't know whether Curtis Main will make it. He's expected to make it. Andy Rose, again, was a late fitness test yesterday. You would hope that, given an extra 4 or 5 days, he'll be ready to return to the team as well. It's a difficult one because I think we had, and I've mentioned it already, we had a rigid starting 11 and it was beginning to breed results. We then get a disappointing one against Hearts and we react with wholesale changes. So it's kind of hard to know what kind of mindset we'll be in going into this one, whether we'll revert back to, for instance, the team that beat Dundee and drew with Rangers, or we react to the 1-0 defeat, which was the same team that played Dundee and Rangers, and look to change things and look to try and stifle Hearts. Because I think in that occasion, they outpowered us, and one of our main traits is our power. So it's going to be a hard one to compensate for here.
Yeah, I think, you know, Jay's pretty much covered it there as well. However we play, you know, well, again, if we go back to what we're good at, what we've been good at over the last, Hearts have sort of proved that they can do that as well, and maybe a bit better than us at that. But again, it's a tough one. Do we try and make changes, change things up a bit? You know, we end up like Saturday there, or as I say, do we stick to what we think we're good at? I think that no matter how we play, I think Hearts will be a different opposition at home. They'll probably try and play a bit more football than they did 2 weeks ago, and it's going to be a difficult game. But again, you know, as I said at the time when Hearts beat us, I don't think there was anything. I don't think they showed anything to fear. I've seen them a couple of times, and you know, they maybe, you know, they're doing great, obviously, but they're not exactly any time that I've seen them. Sorry, they've not exactly been absolutely fantastic. They ground out a result here and there. Sorry, but it's too hard to call what we'll do, and you know, as I say, whether or not Hearts would come back with the same mentality at home. I think at home they'll be a different proposition, and you know what, I think they probably should be trying to play a bit more football, and he probably will be a bit better than us. But as I say, I don't think there's anything to fear going into the game.
Jay, on cup runs, there's a clear financial incentive of going deeper into these cup competitions. As someone that sits on the Welsh Society board, how significant would be reaching a cup semi-final with obviously the potential kick-on of reaching the final?
Oh yeah, well that's it. I mean, I don't think it's any secret now that the club obviously budgets just for, you know, 10th place and zero cup runs, which is obviously a million miles away from what, you know, the kind of the budget system that was kind of heavily criticised by Motherwell fans a good few years ago. So, you know, it certainly puts the club in a really good position. I think last year, everybody's kind of well aware of just how good the club did financially. Yes, that was partly to do with transfers and things like that, but it was also a huge boost with the cup runs. So yeah, I think away from the football, you know, getting past Hearts on Wednesday would be massive for Motherwell financially, and that's of course what we all want. We want it's great to go to cup ties, it's great to go to cup semis and finals, but you know, particularly as a fan-owned club, there also needs to be that kind of the back of your mind now that. It all counts, you know, whether it's TV money, whether it's, you know, Celtic getting into the Champions League and that kind of solidarity money, or whatever it's called, whether it's, you know, getting through cup games, you know, it all sets us up well for the future. So yeah, it would be a fantastic achievement, not just to win at Tynecastle in a cup tie, but it would also be another welcome boost to the club coffers, which has been, you know, fairly a regular kind of bonus since we became fan-owned.
And then following the trip to Tynecastle, we face another away day, and this time Rugby Park. A Kilmarnock side will be massively buoyed by their 2-1 victory over Celtic today. Buster, the circumstances that they won that game as well, what a massive confidence boost for a side that I thought looked like they were on the periphery of they could go either way. I thought that Steve Clark's momentum was maybe fading somewhat. That victory will be a massive lift. They're obviously out the Betfred League Cup as well, so they'll have a whole week to prepare for this one. They'll certainly fancy it, and for us, we'll look on it as another very difficult away fixture.
Yeah, as I said earlier, you know, I watched that Kilmarnock game today. I've seen them play better, but they did exactly what they needed to do, and you know, they went 1-0 down and it, you know, 1-2-1. It's not often that you'll see that against Celtic or, you know, Rangers or, you know, one of the bigger teams in the league. You're not seeing people do that very often. As you says as well, I wasn't too sure if Steve Clark could continue what he's been doing. The turnaround when he came in at that point was obviously unreal. He's obviously a very, very good coach, a good manager. So it's going to be a hard one, and I hate to constantly moan about them, but I hate plastic parks. So, you know, that gives me reason for me wanting them to do really badly. When they were really shy, I thought, this is great, they might get relegated and we'll get rid of one of these plastic parks. But, you know, I think there's three or four of them in the league now, so I don't see them changing their plastic park to grass anytime soon. But as I say, it's going to be, that'd be a good game, and for obvious reasons as well, we'll go down there and meet up with a few mates and get a good bevy in us before we come back up the road.
Yeah, it's always hard to preview a game that you've got a game in between as well. I suppose it goes without saying that the result in the Hearts game will very much dictate the mood going into Saturday's one.
Yeah, that's it. I think it's just one of those ones where we've spoke about it before. It's just quite a difficult run. So I wouldn't necessarily expect two different a game both on Wednesday and Saturday. I think, you know, as we've said, you know, Kelly will be buoyed after a great result against Celtic today. And I think that Steve Clark is, you know, a very intelligent football manager. I think he will be fully aware that both Aberdeen and Hearts have, you know, mixed it up a little bit, played as our own game, got a goal and just sat on it. And I would fully expect Kilmarnock to look to do the exact same. So it will be a very difficult game, and we need to be wary of that now. Unfortunately, as we've said, we don't have a plan B. We don't have a different way of playing. We just need to do what we do best and hope that it's enough on the day.
And let's just finish up by discussing where we're at in the league so far. I saw quite a few panic buttons being pressed at six games in last night, and I thought it was a bit of an overreaction. And I was trying to kind of justify my mindset and the way that I kind of calculate where we're at so far. And this is basically how it works. So sit tight here. Here we go. If you work out what you predict you're going to get from your opening six games, I reckon we're only 1 point short of where we actually are. So last season we based much of our success in the league. I know we only finished seventh, but it was a fairly successful league campaign, particularly when you compare it to the previous season. We beat the teams around us. We beat the Dundees. We beat the Hamiltons more often than not. We beat the likes of who were relegated. I'm already losing the plot here.
One of the Highland League, was it not two of the Highland League teams actually?
Ross County went down. Partick Thistle went down. They were the teams that we recorded positive. Sorry, that was a wee bit of a mind blank there. They were the teams that we beat. We did tend to struggle against the teams that finished above us, which is quite a natural way that the league works. We've got a run of games following the Kilmarnock game where there will be the teams that are currently in and around us in the form of, or I expect to be in and around us in the form of Livingston, St Johnston. These are the games that we badly need to win. I don't think there's any need for panic just now. If I was a Dundee supporter, I'd be very worried. If I was a St Mirren supporter, I think they expected to start a lot better. I didn't really expect them to start much better, it must be said. Hamilton, you would expect to be there or thereabouts. Yes, we're only on 4 points from six games. It's not a fantastic tally. But you've got to consider we have went to difficult places like Pittodrie and Easter Road already. There will be what you would regard on paper as easier games coming up. It's certainly not time to start panicking just now.
Well, I thought you were going to take us through, like, you know, each of the results. I mean, when you did that with me yesterday on the way back down from Aberdeen, I found it hard to argue. I think you had us at minus 1 point, and that was on the assumption that we would take a point at home at Hearts, which, you know, is still a big, big ask considering how well Hearts have been doing. So I do agree. I think, you know, that there's points that we've picked up that maybe on paper we weren't expected to, and vice versa. And as you say, that's just how it works. Like, as I said earlier, I don't think there's any panic buttons needing pressed. I certainly don't think we're going to be in a relegation fight. You know, it just so happens that we're discussing this after playing, you know, two of the better sides in the league who have the experience and the capabilities to play us at our own game, do it better, and make themselves incredibly difficult to break down after they've went ahead. As I said earlier, I think you're facing an entirely different game against the likes of St Mirren, against the likes of Dundee, even Aki's, who yes, managed to beat us, but we were the better team in that day. Probably would have, I think the lineup that we have been playing in the last few weeks before yesterday probably would have beaten Aki's that day. I think someone like Danny Johnson, for example, would have put the ball in the net. So I'm not concerned. I still think that we're a good enough side to beat those teams. But I think, you know, you go into the season, you know, any season, and you want to aspire to the top six. That's where we are at the moment. We're a bottom six side, and, you know, the next step is to aspire to the top six. And for me, from what I've seen already this season, that's already gone. You know, we're not a top six side. We don't have a plan B. Our plan A is quite easy to combat if you have the players to do so. And there are at least six sides in this league that have the players to do so. So teams like Aberdeen, teams like Hearts, Hibs, Kilmarnock, you know, out with the Old Firm. Those are exactly the kind of sides who, if they are wise to the way we play, will look to get that goal, open the score, and then just allow us to pass the ball from side to side. So I think we will find it incredibly difficult. Unless something happens in January, or someone comes out of nowhere and suddenly is a creative genius, you know, I can see us really struggling to against those sides above us if they are smart enough to play the same way Aberdeen and Hearts have recently. But I certainly wouldn't be pressing any panic buttons. I think we are still a side that on our day will beat the likes of Dundee and St Mirren, you know, exactly the sides who will be struggling with relegation this year.
Well, just on the back, obviously, as you mentioned, Sparra's calculations when used to were on the way up to Aberdeen.
I had a lot more time in the car to Aberdeen, so I didn't really want to go into this. And again,
Of course not.
I've got a life to lead here.
But even looking at it, you know, as I say, I would maybe have picked, expected this. The only one I think we can be disappointed is the Hamilton game. Other than that, 3 points away to Dundee. Other than that, you know, there's not really much there. That Rangers at home, it's a very hard game, you know. There's nothing else there really that you're missing out. So I think what you guys are saying is, you know, perfectly right. There's we're not really that far off where we probably would like to have been. But I think people are a bit concerned about the manner in which we're losing. As we've said already, as Jay was just saying, we don't seem to have a plan B. That's the main problem. We don't have, anytime we change it up, it's miles out or it's man for man. So I think that's maybe the, you know, where any sort of panic is coming from. But again, just as Jay says there, when you look at the league, there's not a chance that we'll be anywhere near the top six. There's six teams that are automatically definitely better than us. Then you've got Livingston, who are on a really good, you know, run of form. Fair dues, we already beat them actually in the cup, but they're doing really well in the league. And you know, as I say, there's nothing really to fear in that bottom six. You know, when we go up against MD in that bottom six, I'd be expecting us to give them a really good game if not win them. But as you say, we're not really that far away from where we should be. And it's been a pretty tough opening set of fixtures.
The issue with the plan B thing is, I think we all know, I think most people, when they talk about a lack of plan B, they really mean, you know, the ability to bring somebody on or go away that's going to create chances. You know, to go from that, not necessarily a long ball team, but we are kind of rough and ready, and we're very rigid. And we get a lot of joy for set pieces. And I think there's a plan B. People are maybe, you know, talking about someone who can come in and put the ball, foot in the ball and create things. Now, Craig Tanner is quickly turning into the Messiah. You know, the absence makes the heart go fonder kind of thing. You know, he's, by all accounts now, he's a creative genius. If you listen to some folk, when, you know, there was long spells where he couldn't even get in the team. Not to say he's not a good player, but he's not going to be the you know, the game changer that I think a lot of people think he's going to be. And I've got some sympathy for Robinson and, you know, those at the club who are tasked with bringing players in, because it's all very well us sitting here criticising Robinson or the management team or the club as a whole because we don't have anyone with creativity. But, you know, who is this centre mid that, you know, can create chances out of nothing that we can snap up for free? You know, I just, these guys don't, you know, there isn't a long queue of them down for Park Street, like, asking for contracts. So I can kind of understand why we haven't managed to bring in anyone like that. But it is a concern. You know, you look at the game yesterday, the four, I can think of four real sort of moments where we did really anything. One was, you know, the Freer. You know, the only time we actually got in behind Aberdeen was Biggie's pass into Freer. And, you know, it could have been a penalty. Other than that, the other penalty decision was just a cross into the box from a corner. And then it was two snapshots, you know, McHugh, a hit and hope with his right foot when he actually, you know, fell over as he hit it. He just swung his leg at it that hits the bar. And then Cadden, you know, takes it on his wrong foot. He's just, again, it's a hit and hope, just trying to control it, make sure it's in target and it's a good save. So, you know, you can't be going 90 minutes where that's your kind of highlights reel. You know, I noticed Robinson said after the game that we, you know, dominated long periods of the game. And statistically, you know, you could argue that's true because we had so much possession. But if you're just going to do nothing with it, then that is a concern. But as I said, I do have sympathy because if the plan B is that we need somebody who can come on and create something, I just don't know who that person is. You know, I don't see them. You know, they are quite rare in football as it is. And so to just assume that we have deliberately chosen not to sign someone like that, I think it's a little naive. We are what we are. It's just a shame that when teams wise up to it, we are going to be found, you know, around the 8th or 9th position in the league.
I was going to mention Tanner as someone that we suggested was or had been kind of touted as a solution to our problems. It looks like Tanner will be out for longer than expected as well. So while I'd said in the podcast a couple of weeks ago that I thought that it would maybe take the winter break to be his mini pre-season, it looks like he might not be ready until after the winter break. So certainly a bit of a headache there in terms of when you'll see a fit Craig Tanner back. If he's only returning mid-January time, Are you going to have to wait till March until he's fully fit and ready to go? By that point, you've only got 2 months of your season left. So Tanner is very unlikely to play a significant part in this season as it stands. I hope that's not the case, and I hope that he's back as quickly as possible. But it certainly looks like the injury is worse than first feared, which is certainly a disappointment. Guys, busy week ahead, but I think that's pretty much all we've got, unless someone was going to say something there to finish.
No, I was going to say, I think Tanner's done for the year, but, you know, as you say, unless he comes back mid-March or something and we're in a cup final or whatever and he does something then, I think, you know, he's going to be used sparingly towards the end of the year to bring his fitness back a wee bit, but I think he's done, unfortunately.
Guys, thank you very much for your time tonight. It's been, I suppose we're still in fairly optimistic mood. It's a big week, as I already mentioned there. Let's hope we can get a few positive results and we'll return next week full of the joys of, well, winter now, I guess. Thank you again.
Cheers.
No bother, thanks.
You've been listening to the MFC podcast. We'll be back next Monday. Until then, thank you and goodbye.
This ain't the down, it's the upbeat, make it complete. So what's the story? Guaranteed accuracy, enhanced CD. Latest technology, darts at treble 20. Huge non-recoupable advance, majors be vigilant. I excel in both content and deliverance. So let's put on our classics and we'll have a little dance, shall we? No sales pitch, no media hype. No hydro, it's nice and right. I speak in communications in bold type. This ain't your archetypal street sound. Scan for ultrasounds, north, south, east, west and all round. And then to the underground.
You say that everything sounds the same. Then you go by them. There's no excuses, my friend. Let's push things forward. You say that everything sounds the same. Then you go by them. Let's push things forward.
As we progress to the checkpoint, I wholeheartedly agree with your viewpoint, but this ain't your typical garage joint. I make points which hold significance. That ain't a bag, it's a shipment. This ain't a track, it's a movement. I got the settlement. My frequencies are transient and resonate your eardrums. I make bangers, not anthems. Leave that to the Artful Dodger. The broad-shouldered 51% shareholder. You won't find us on Alta Vista. Cult classic, not bestseller. You're gonna need more power. Plug in the three phase and the generator. Crank it up to the gigawatts. Critics ready with your pot shots. The plot thickens. Put on your mittens for these sub-zero conditions. But remember I'm just spitting. Remember I'm just spitting. Once bitten, forever smitten.
You say that everything sounds the same. Then you go by them. There's no excuses, my friend. Things forward. You say that everything sounds the same. Then you go by them. There's no excuses, my friend. Let's push things forward.
Spit jewels like Eastern riches, junkie fixes. Around here we say birds, not as London Bridge burns down, Brixton's burning up. Turns out you're in luck, so I know this dodgy f***ing the duck. So it's just another show flick from your local city poet. Case you geezers don't know it, let's push things forward. It's a tall order, but we're taller. Calling all maulers, backstreet brawlers, corner shop crawlers. Victory's flawless. Love us or hate us, but don't slate us. Don't conform to formulas. Pop genres are shut. Sharp darts, double dutch. Park cars, troubles are much with more bud. Let's push things forward.
You say that everything sounds the same. Then you go by them.